The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
I think Anthony just felt that it was completely impossible to follow Winston Churchill because give us the tools and we will finish the job. Incredible, incredible speech. And of course, as I said, on this day, back in history, Winston Churchill went off to the United States and appealed to U.S. Congress for funding. Give us the tools and we will finish the job. Anthony Reich, a very good morning. I'm not sure how easy it is to follow Winston Churchill.
Very, very difficult indeed, especially on Lugbomir, when it's not really Lugbomir, according to many of the people, because, of course, the celebrations for Lugbomir today are very much doused, I would say, because of social distancing and because of the fact that no bonfires are allowed. But we can talk about Lugbomir and we can talk about some of the political things that have been going on in Israel. What do you say,
Howard? Yeah, so let's start off with Lugbomir, just because we are already there. So first of all, can we just talk about the significance of the holiday? Because I know that there's more to it than getting a haircut and lighting a bonfire.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't really understand what Lugbomir is about. Let's start off with the name, Lugbomir. Lamed Gimel, the two letters which form Lugbomir, Lamed Gimel, are actually the Hebrew letters for the number 33. And this signifies the 33rd day in the counting of the Omer being the seven-week period that stretches between Pesach and Shavuot, 7 weeks, 49 days we count, and today is the 33rd day, and so hence it's called Lag BaOmer, simple as that. But the question is why? Where does Lag BaOmer actually come from? And it's all really very Kabbalistic and very, very spiritual. And it really surrounds two significant individuals who lived around the first and the second centuries. The first of which is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who is widely considered to be the author of the spiritual book, the Kabbalistic book, the Zohar. According to the Zohar, today is the date of Shimon Bar Yochai's Chilula, which is widely interpreted to be the anniversary of the day that he died. And that's why people congregate on Mount Meron, Har Meron, which is the burial site for Shimon Bar Yochai. He is, of course, a great spiritualist, author of the Zohar, which is a very spiritual book and very closely associated with Kabbalah. And so people celebrate. There is a certain celebration, even though it's the anniversary of his death, but they celebrate and they visit his gravesite. But of course, also, we need to link that into Rabbi Akiva, because of course, Shimon Bar Yochai was one of the five students who were students of Rabbi Akiva, who survived this epidemic. I don't think it was a pandemic. I think it was an epidemic that swept through, killing 24,000 people in the period between Pesach and Lag BaOmer. 24,000 students died of some sort of a plague. And it's quite ironic that we're experiencing something relatively similar to that this year, and hence our inability to celebrate Lag BaOmer in the traditional way that we normally celebrate it. But just one little Kabbalistic kind of interpretation of Lag BaOmer. Each week of the Omer is associated with a certain character. So the first week with Chesed, and the second week with Gvura, might, and the third week with Tiferet, beauty. The fifth week, in which we are in now, is associated with Hod, with acknowledgement, with some sort of spirit. It's very, very spirit. It's probably the most spiritual of the characters, splendor. And each day of the week, because we have 7 weeks, and of course 7 days in each week, and each day of the week is also associated with one of those characters. So if we take the 33rd day, which is the fifth day in the fifth week, then it's the day of Hod in the week of Hod, the day of acknowledgement of splendor in the week of acknowledgement and splendor. And so that's considered to be one of the most spiritual days during the counting of the Omer. Just a little kind of Kabbalistic interpretation.
Amazing.
For you.
Really amazing. And Zanati, that's why we're both feeling so upbeat
today. That is why.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, because we have gratitude. That's exactly
absolutely
what it's about. Yeah, so at least now you've explained it, Anthony. Thank you. All right, yesterday, incredibly, we reported on this, was the 60th anniversary of the capture of Nazi war criminal Adolf Eichmann, who was brought to Israel to stand trial. When looking back on these events after 60 years, is there still significance for for us and for Israel in particular?
Undoubtedly. Undoubtedly, I think this was a massively significant moment. Of course, you know, the story about how the Mossad got to Argentina, to that house on Garibaldi Street, which was so famously told, the story told in that movie and numerous books that have been written about this capture, which was really, really astonishing. Exactly 60 years yesterday since he was captured. And it is said that once he was actually captured by the Mossad, he said to them in German, "I accept my fate." He understood exactly what was happening to him. Ricardo Clement, as he was then known, in Argentina, a motor car worker, foreman at a local motor car factory in Argentina, living in a house that had no running water or electricity on the outskirts of Buenos Aires. Really an amazing story. He was undoubtedly the architect of the so-called final solution. He had the blood of millions of Jews on his hands. There was absolutely no doubt about the fact that he deserved what came to him, that the Mossad managed to capture him and brought him to Israel. He effectively became, the poster boy, if that's a word that we want to use. He became the example for all of those people, the Jews who had survived the Holocaust and come to Israel. He became their target, a way of allowing people to express what they had gone through in the course of the trial that took place in 1961, and ultimately, of course, was sentenced to death, the only person in Israel ever to have been executed, because there is a special law in Israel that allows execution only for Nazi war criminals. And of course, he was the only one who ultimately was brought to Israel and stood trial here and was successfully convicted and ultimately sentenced to death. So there is no doubt that there was massive significance then. There is huge significance now. You know, the story of the Mossad is legendary, how they managed to get him, how they caught him, and how they used the plane that had been chartered to for the Israeli delegation to go to Argentina to celebrate the 150th anniversary of Argentinian independence. The Israeli delegation arrived on this plane, and coming back on the plane was Adolf Eichmann to stand trial in Israel. I mean, that's just part of the legend of the story about how things worked out on that day back in May of 1960. But certainly, there's so many stories that can be told and so much significance that can be attached to those events. Definitely something that we can't just allow to pass without mentioning.
Yeah, very, very interesting indeed. I watched a movie on Netflix, and was it called Eichmann? It's an incredible, incredible show. If anybody knows the name of that, if they could message me, it'd be great to share with listeners. It's very, very much very worthwhile to watch. It really is a good show. Anthony, other things we wanted to talk about was the two minor earthquakes were experienced in the north of Israel yesterday. Was there any impact?
So there were very small earthquakes, and so therefore no impact. 3.2 and 2.7 on the Richter scale respectively. One just north of Beit Sha'an, which is sort of in the Jordan Valley area, where the Jordan Valley and the Israel Valley come together, Beit Sha'an. And the other one was just north of Nahariya along the coastline. And this follows, of course, an earthquake that shook the city of Eilat about a month ago. So really a lot of seismic activity. By the way, another quite big earthquake around 6.5 on the Richter scale was felt in the Greek island of Crete. And so a lot of seismic activity in this area. What goes on in Crete is on a slightly different tectonic plate, on a slightly different fault line than the activity that we're seeing on the Jordan Valley side, which of course would have affected Beit Sha'an. But certainly I would say an increase in seismic activity, an indication that a big earthquake is certainly due in terms of time. There is a huge expectation that a large earthquake will be felt in this area in the not too distant future. There have been a lot of preparation, some work going on to try to strengthen buildings across Israel to make them more earthquake proof. A massive program called Tama, which has gone to strengthen older blocks of flats. Unfortunately, it's still not widespread enough across Israel, but certainly now a number of buildings that never used to be earthquake proof have been improved and strengthened in order to be able to withstand earthquakes. There is no doubt that a big one is due sometime soon.
All right. And it's an interesting thing because it's kind of always there, but we don't quite get the seriousness of it. The swearing in of the new government has been delayed until Thursday. That's to accommodate the visit to Israel by the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and that's due to take place. So, what is urgent enough to warrant a visit by Pompeo now?
It's an interesting question, and I'm not really sure. I don't know whether it's the significance of the new government finally being sworn in, or if there are other things going on behind the scenes that we are not really aware of. I know there's a lot of increase in talk about the possibility of annexation of the certain areas of the West Bank. We've had this discussion, this debate going on ever since Trump's speech a few months ago, where he acknowledged that Israel has rights to sovereignty over areas of the West Bank. And of course, there is a lot of talk about this in the international community. The Israeli government, Prime Minister Netanyahu in particular, has mentioned the fact that he would like to take advantage of the green light that Trump has given in order to exercise annexation of certain parts of Judea and Samaria. There is quite a lot of support from certain parts of Israel for this idea. Not necessarily all Israeli supports it, and of course within the international community there's a lot of opposition. Only yesterday France was saying that they would really get the European Union to react to any attempt at annexing parts of Judea and Samaria, to respond very, very strongly and severely. This is France mentioning this. Pompeo was asked about this, and he essentially said, look, this is an Israeli issue. It's Israel's decision to make. This is nothing that I want to talk about or I want to be involved in. I think that's probably just hiding the reality, because I think that it's really the U.S. government which has emboldened, let's say, Prime Minister Netanyahu and his government to potentially go ahead and take this annexation step. So I'm not sure if Pompeo is going to talk about this or whether there might be other things on the agenda. I'm kind of more interested in whether he's going to have to go into quarantine when he arrives in Israel. Yes. Or they're going to have like a quarantine room at the airport and everybody's going to have their temperatures taken and put their gloves and their masks on in order to meet. This is going to be an interesting one, and I'm not quite sure if all of that's going to be broadcast on TV for everybody to see the kind of strange situation that will happen. But Pompeo is due to arrive in Israel tomorrow, and I guess once the meetings have taken place, we might get to learn a little bit more about exactly what's on his agenda, or maybe not, you know, because probably the most important things will be hidden from view anyway.
Yeah, interesting indeed. And yeah, there was one more thing that I actually wanted to discuss with you, but now it has completely slipped my mind. Anything else that you wanted to cover?
Well, there was this issue about the IDF that demolished the home of
Greenish Schnurb. Because I hate talking about this. So it was absolutely a psychological thing. I just blocked it out of my mind completely.
Yeah, but it's a very controversial thing to talk about.
Because I'm personally very conflicted around whether I think it's a worthwhile punishment to demolish homes of terrorists who commit atrocities on Israelis or, you know. So your thoughts and what happened yesterday?
I think, well, what happened was that the IDF effectively went in to the home of the terrorist, the family home of the terrorist who killed Greenish Schnurb back in August of last year at that spring near Dolev. And they demolished this home, and they demolished some olive orchards that were around the area. And there was just a demolition in general of the family existence. And the reason that the IDF are doing this is because the terrorist himself was actually killed. And so therefore, there's nothing more that the terrorists can do. There's no further punishment that can be meted out. But the problem is that, you know, there is a certain view that the family and the community are party to these acts of terror, that it's not committed just by the one individual, that there is a certain support system that evolves around these individuals, and that those people should not escape unharmed, that they should not just say, well, he did the act and therefore he's paid the price and, you know, everybody will go home and feel satisfied with this. And it's interesting that this particular case actually went through the Israeli court system. In other words, that there were court appeals that were lodged and that were heard before the IDF actually took this action. And the court ultimately confirmed that the IDF has the right to go ahead and demolish the homes and to punish the support system, the family around that individual. It is something which conflicts people, conflicts our society. We're not entirely sure that this is really the way to behave, but certainly we have to do something about these random acts of terror, and we also have to deal with the support system that operates around them. So that is just the way it is being done at the moment.
Yeah, interesting indeed. Time is 8:01. Anthony Rath, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning, same time, same place. Here is your news with Zanati's apologies that it's slightly late, but everything's been slightly late today, hasn't it, Zanati?
We really have.
Yeah, I don't know. We've just kind of having our own best time, and everything is just running as it does. It's 8:01. Good morning.